Today we are looking at, does anybody know what we're looking at? Effective public speaking. Okay, and at this time I'm going to ask you to stand. We're going to just stretch a little bit because I know you've been waiting a few minutes, and we are going to pray. Did you have a good lunch? Did you have some rest before you came?
No.
Okay. Let's pray. Loving Father, we are so grateful to you for having been with us since we left here yesterday, and you have brought us back here today. You have done so many things for us that we don't even know, and we are grateful to you because you're a God and you mean good for us at all times. So today, as we learn about effective communication and about public speaking, so that we can minister for you in our different areas, we ask that you will open our minds and our understanding. You will be with me as the speaker so that things will be clear to the ladies, so that they will be able to really go and to speak effectively for you. This we ask in your Son's name. Amen.
Amen.
Amen. So this is a topic that brings a lot of fear to a lot of us and a lot of trepidation to others. And no matter how you see speakers up the front, there is always something in the little heart that is just moving around, you know, no matter how many times you have done it. I'm sure you see people that you feel so, that they're so confident and all, but every time that you come up to speak, there is some amount of trepidation for everybody, unless you're not really, really normal. You have some people who just, yes, yes. But this is a long presentation. It was written by Nancy Van Pelt, who is a leader, was a leader in women's ministry and in family ministries in our church over the years. And it's a part of the certification program. Most of this is going to be a lecture, unfortunately, and then I want to go through it quickly so that you can actually practice and have some practical little tips as to what you can do when you're going to actually do a presentation. Let me see the hands of those who anticipate having to do a presentation in their church. Good. Let me see the hands of those who have ever had to introduce somebody in their church. Yes. Those who have ever had to give an award to someone, no matter how small it is. Yes. Okay, so it's all in the realm of public speaking. You have been given your handouts because today's lecture, you could fill in the blanks so that you can take it. You're not going to get a big Word document with you so that you can fill in the appropriate spots. But what I'd like you to do is to pay attention and then write the answer, the correct answers in. Okay, so why public speaking? Why public speaking? Public speaking is necessary because there are some times that you want to convey some sort of information. Did you get your handout? Oh, I saw my husband with them at his side there, I was wondering. Okay. Yes, it is necessary because at some time or the other, we want to convey information to others. And sometimes we cannot do it in the regular way, the one-on-one communication way. We have to do it with more than one person at a time because we're either given the same information to many people and we want them to get the same message, or we don't have the time to do it to everybody. If it's 100 persons, we don't have the time. Or the situation may not allow for us to just talk individually to each person. So there are three main types of public speaking. And they're on the board. three main types of public speaking. The speaking, okay, we don't have the types up there yet, but the speech is to inform you. This is what public speaking does. It explains things. You might have a report to give. You might have to describe something to someone. You might have to clarify, or you might have to define or demonstrate something to someone. But there are three types of public speaking. And in your little thing, it has there the little, in your, on your paperwork, you have where you need to fill in the blanks there. The three categories of speeches that we have, the speeches are to either inform you, they are to either persuade you, or they are to entertain you. So there are three different categories of speeches. Now the speeches that inform you, they usually are like a report, or they describe something, or they're defining something. The speeches that persuade you, they are either to convince you about a goal, or they are there to change your beliefs or your attitudes. So it might be, it's usually very emotional. You might have a reason to be changing someone's position, whether it's right or wrong. And that's the kind of speech, the second kind of speech. And the third type is one to entertain. And this is by far the hardest one. And I'm not really very good at that one. My husband is more than I am. And he's naturally very humorous, and he can do that very well. So this is usually done to put you at ease, to the person is usually more charismatic. It's not a logical, factual, analytical person like myself. So this is the third type of speeches that we have. Now, it is important for you to identify what you are best at and try to make your speeches in line with what you are comfortable with. Because can you imagine someone who is more inclined to be factual and logical trying to be really, really humorous? They probably don't get that punchline in really too well, right? But you might be impressive by the statistics that you give to back up the information that you have in your speech, and that's what you might be good at. But in order to be good presenters, we all need to marry these three things in order to be very good at it. We need to have our facts, we need to be persuasive, and we need to have some humor with it. And that's something that comes with time and practice. Now, there are three types of presenters. You have the cool presenters that usually draw from their facts and their figures. They are logical, they are deliberate, they are rational, they are intelligent, and they are insightful. Then you have the hot presenters, and they are usually more emotional, passionate, they are driven, they are charismatic, they are impulsive, and they are daring. They dare you to go to a different length. And then you have the third type, which is the dull presenters. And these are the ones that they stand up and you wish that they would just go away after a while, right? Because they are cautious, they're predictable, they are just plain boring. Now, at every stage, the presenters will go into that phase. You know, every presenter have a stage that they are dull and boring. Every presenter have a stage that they might be hot and cool. But it's for you to measure and to mix in such a way that your audience will be always alert and ready to listen to you. So you might find out that you're primarily one type, but with practice and with the skills that we are going to learn in this presentation class, effective communication class or public speaking, then you will learn what to do to help yourself. So there are four basic methods of delivery. And the four basic methods of delivery are, you could use a manuscript like I'm using today. And I'm using a manuscript because this presentation was not written by myself. And it contains specific information that they want you to learn in training in order for you to get your certification. So it's a lot like being in school and doing a course, right? Yes, you're hearing the music somewhere.
Yeah.
That's our background music for today. Okay, that's all right. Okay, so you have a transcript, and this have several advantages because it gives you some amount of security that your material is here and that you can find it and that you won't just rumble off and get lost. It also helps you to keep focus in what you're saying. But it also can cause you to negate from using some of the good skills that you're supposed to use, like eye contact, because you are looking at this manuscript to find where you are and to continue, it might divert from you doing some of those good things. Or you can begin to sound monotone, like you are reading and, you know, it's not that good. Also, you have the second type that you can recite it from memory. And you usually see these charismatic speakers, they learn their thing, and they are saying it, and they are doing it from memory, and you say, how in the world do these people do that? Well, Daniel Webster, who wrote the Webster's Dictionary, I heard from his stories that for 3 and 4 hours, he would have audiences compelled just listening to him because he had such a good memory. Now, you and I might not have that, like Daniel. So we might have to do other things. We might have to do a script. The main advantage of doing things from memory, if you are the type or if you have a good memory and you can do your old presentation from memory, is the advantages is that you can bond with your audience, you can have a face-to-face contact, you seem more credible, you are more charismatic because you have more time to bond and to talk with the audience instead of just trying to keep to your script and to follow. The third type of speaker we have is the impromptu speaker. And this is, they have something to say. They follow 3 basic rules. They have something to say. They make their audience believe what they have to say. And they are simply direct. And their talk is usually very meaningful. Those are the rules that you need to have if you are going to, or to adhere to if you're going to give an impromptu speak. You have to say something that is important. The audience must understand you, and you must speak simply, directly, and meaningful so that you can convey a certain amount of credibility and get a certain amount of credibility from your audience. One advantage of speaking impromptu is that it seems natural, you know, because the person is making it up or as they go along. And they also seem like they're knowledgeable and things are very lucid and fluid. You know, they have time to form their sentences and all of that. Yeah, they are free. Okay, then the last one is speaking extemporaneously. And that is, you have some notes some little jottings that you're following, but mostly you're making up your sentences as you go along surrounding these main points. A lot of people love to do that. They love to, if they're called upon, emergency, you see them writing, jotting down a few notes, and then they work around that. Okay? Those are the type. However, whichever type that you're doing, you must be organized. You must be organized. Organization is key for you to be competent and trustworthy in giving your presentation. You must be organized. Now, how long should our talk be? How long should it be? William Henry was nominated as President of the United States, and in his address, his first address to the constituents of the United States, he took 2 hours to make his delivery. And it was a very cold day, very damp and cold day. He had 9,000 words in his speech. And in a month, he died of pneumonia. And the moral of the story is... If you have a mighty long speech that you think is so good, you must make it in a warm place. No, but the moral is that your speech should be long enough to grip your audience, say what you have to say, inform them, and to wrap up and solidify what you're trying to impart. Now, Abraham Lincoln was asked once, you know, how long should the length a man's leg be, how long? And his simple answer was, long enough for it to reach the ground. And that was his answer. So in fact, they're saying that if you you contrast the two presidents, well, one had something to say, and in a short time they conveyed that, and the other one took hours, and he got sick as a result. Okay, the length of the speech is important according to the time slots that you have been given. Most times when we are asked to speak as speakers, you are given a specific time slot. Like mine is an hour with an overflow between now and the next break, the next time someone is in. But these certifications courses are for an hour and a half block, but I've been given an hour. So I'm trying my best to fit it in the slot without shortchanging you. But most times what we do is we get the time slots. The organizers of whatever event that is happening, who asks you to speak, they are not so much concerned about your presentation. Their concern is the time slot that you're filling in and that you're going to finish on time and adhere to the time slots. So as presenters, then you have to make your presentation fit within the time slots that you're given. Okay, the first thing you need to do is to know the audience that you're going to have. It is important to know the audience. It's important. The size of the audience matter. And so if you're talking to only 30 people, then you will be able to have direct eye contact very easily because you can turn, you can serve. But can you imagine speaking to 30 to 50? Then it gets a little bit more difficult for you because then you have to turn some more and you have to reach some more further. And the amount of time that you get to focus on each section is less, because you have to scan a broader cross-section. And then if you go to 100 people, then you have to realize that you have to capture the attention of the person that is way in the back, because if you don't get her attention, she's going to pick up her bag and she's going to leave. So you need to be able to monitor that. Now, your audience, what is the makeup of your audience? What is the makeup? And you have... different people that you are asked to speak to. You have your superiors, that when you're making a presentation to superiors, people who are usually professionals that are over and above you in qualifications, then you are to use facts to back up whatever you're doing. If it's a lecture, if it's a presentation, you need facts, because they want to know why you, who are not a professional in their realm, what do you have to say to them? So it should be backed up with facts. Now, if you're speaking to your peers, you're sharing information. You're not speaking down to them. They are not your subordinates. You are sharing information. And so you can draw them into your presentation, use their expertise and their experiences to help you during the presentation. You can also show where you're vulnerable, you know, because you're not an expert in everything, because you're all together on the same team. Then if you're talking to team members, you know, peers that I just said was if professional peers, like if you're nurses, you're teachers together, you're doctors together, you're fellow women's ministries leaders together. Now, for your team, if you're working with a particular team, and you're not the leader or you are the leader, then you have to focus around their concern, relate to facts and examples, so that you can show them the facts and the examples. You know, you talk about we instead of I and you. You use the language we, and you accept any blame for anything that goes wrong or anything like that in the team when you're making that presentation. Now, you have special interest groups that you might be asked to speak to, like particular thing about parenting. People are mothers, you know, and it's a specific thing, then you have to center your presentation around their concerns and what they ask you to do, and you you try to persuade them into accepting the information that you have to give. That's how your presentation should be like. And then if it's a mixed group, then you have to mix up the techniques that you're using so that people in the group, different ones, will glean different things from them. Now, there are mixed groups like gender mix, age range mix, occupational mix, professional expertise, educational background mix. Sometimes you have like religious mix. It could be all Christians, but they are not from the same nomination. You might be asked to present something at a Sunday church, you know, that in your community. And it might be a different group that have different moral values, you know, because there are so many groups now that it might be a group that you're not really enthused about, but they know about the health message and they want you to talk to them about that, you know. So you have to be aware of that. Time to outline. So after you realize what audience you have and you look at that, then you start to plan by making an outline. And I'm sure most of us have done that because we have written essays, right? When you went to school, you were asked to write essays. And what did the outline look like? Okay. What did the outline look like when you write an essay? Anybody? You remember what your outline looked like? Introduction. Yes. And then you have the conclusion. Yes. So that's how you do your, you're a bright student. You know how to do it already. Yes, you have your introduction, you have your body, which is the main points. And then under those main points, you have sub points. And then under those sub points, you have sub points. And then you have the conclusion. And in doing that, you have to, each of the ideas that you bring forth, you have to make them credible by using by using like a story, testimonies, statistics, or anything like that that will make your points credible. So here is how you do the preparation outline. You have the introduction, like she said, our brilliant student. What's your name again? Perline. Yes, Perline told us about this, you know, and then you have your sub-points there. So now you have to build the body first. And the body is the main part that you're going to do for your presentation. Because when, let's go back, you build the body first, and then you're going back to the introduction. The introduction is where you want the listeners to really, really get a grasp of what you're going to say, and you want it to be interesting. Okay? So the body is should have about 3 to 5 points that would take you about 20 minutes to make in an half an hour presentation. And then you develop these points and you substantiate them, backing them up with additional evidence such as quotes on facts, statistics, and also by quoting experts in the area. Okay? At this point, it might seem very boring to you because you're doing research and you're getting these points. But you get as good an examples that you can get, and good support information, good examples, good stories, and any joke that might make your point get across. Okay? And then after you have the main part, body of the presentation, then you need to worry about the beginning and also the end. Because the beginning, the introduction, is going to be very important, and the conclusion is going to wrap up everything dynamically. So you do the body first, then you go back to the beginning. Because the beginning, you have to get the attention of the audience. You have to make it arresting and startling. Some people, and you have to make it... you know, make them curious about what is going to be into the whole body of the presentation. Then at the end, if you think the beginning is hard, the end should be the most vital part, because that's when you're going to wrap up everything that you have said. And you're going to conclude and say... you're going to make sure that your audience have understood what you have said and that you're coming to the end now. And then you're going to reinforce whatever you say throughout the presentation at the end of it. And you can use sentences like, in conclusion, or this is my last thought. Or let me say this in my in ending, in speaking with you today. Those are some of the words that you could use. And it should be about 5 to 10% of your whole presentation. Now, for every presentation that you're going to do, prepare to use 4 hours to prepare for it. At least 4 hours to prepare for it. And now we're going to go back to our outline. Now look at these two outlines and tell me what is the main difference that you see between the one that seems more effective and the one that is not so effective. Oh, let me see the hands of those who think that the one that they have labeled ineffective, which one do you prefer? We're going to call that ineffective one A and this one B. Let me see the ones who prefer outline A. Let me see the ones who prefer outline B. Okay. And would you mind sharing with us why you prefer outline B? Anybody?
The indenting makes more sense. You keep moving it in as your points get smaller.
Okay, the indentation makes sense for you. Anybody else have another answer? Okay, it tends to be clearer as you speak, you know, the main points, the indentation helps you to go from one to the next, as you said. And that is how they recommend that you would write your outline. You should also leave spaces between and in the margin area so that if you have additional information last minute that you might want to scribble in, you can scribble, but not too much that will lengthen your presentation because you're going to have to time your presentation. So the words on both versions is exactly alike, but they feel that visually you'd be able to, when you are presenting, use the second one much easier than the first one. Now, visual aids, and we're going to discuss that a little bit. I would like each of at your own little table to discuss for me how you think visual aids help, or why, give reasons why we should use visual aids. If you could come up with some reasons so that you can share it with all of us. I'm giving you 5 minutes. You could write them down very quickly, why we should use visual aids. Okay, we're going to cease and desist right now from discussion, and we're going to ask really very quickly, can this group share with us one reason why we should use visual aids?
Because there's different types of learners.
Different type of learners, and you want to tell us a little bit about that?
For auditory, it's more tactile,
they
have to write notes, more visual.
Mm-hmm.
We were just saying, too, that Jesus used object lessons,
mm-hmm.
So we follow
Him. We have any teachers on that table? Huh? You're a homeschool teacher. Okay, so you know about kinesthetic, auditory, and tactile, all those different kinds of learners. My husband and I did a course. We were doing our PhD in learning styles, and that had a lot to do with how people learn and the real need of visual impact on some people, and the need for tactile, for touch for some people, and need for auditory. Now, you can tell me a million things, but if you don't show me even just the writing, I forget most of what you have said. You know, I've got to see something. If it's even in writing, even though it's a full page of writing, I will remember, you know. Yes. Okay, very good. Now over here, give us one reason why we should use visual aids.
Clarity.
For clarity,
so,
yeah.
For example, flowcharts or graphs or something like that.
That's right. Because sometimes when we have materials to do, like statistical material where people are not number inclined, a chart can really tell them more than the numbers itself. Anybody else?
It it maintains attention, you know, also like, because seeing an image is better than describing something. Like, you know, describing, mm-hmm. you know, if you were describing what an amoeba looks like, you know, if they see that picture, you know, that's better than just saying, well, it's a little round thing with cilia, you know.
Yes, because some of the descriptive words could go for anything. The picture that we're painting, we're not sure of what picture the person has in their mind, even though we're saying the words, because to us, we're describing what we're seeing, but that person, you don't know what they're perceiving in their mind. So the picture would obviously be a better thing than just the description. About that paper. Yes. Right. Okay.
A lot of times on that children, people might say something,
mm-hmm.
describe something to you.
Yeah.
What they mean for you might be different.
Yes.
So you'll be making a different picture from the one they have in mind.
And this table over here?
All the places that we discussed were kind of already
covered. Yes. Focus. Right. So pictures, visual aids can help more focusing. Can I just go to her first? Okay.
Actually, yes. She has said what I wanted to say.
Okay.
But I have to say, when you bring a picture up right away, I become more alert again.
Right.
You change the attitude or the, you know.
Yes.
If it is a boring speaker.
Yeah.
And you bring the pictures in, you have to make it.
Yes. Okay. Very good. Very good.
Two different things. One is it helps, or people now are used to media presentations.
Mm-hmm.
So they're used to having some type of visual, and it adds pizzazz.
Okay. Now, when you see something, you tend to retain 82% of it within the next 24 hours. Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's the thing that I was trying to put across. Like, when I went to Safeway as a cashier, and there's hundreds of PLUs that I have to remember.
Yes.
And I would remember the PLUs for vegetables by pictures and word association or number association with.
Yeah, so you associate the pictures and numbers and help you with your memory. Yes, and 3 weeks later, after you've heard it and you retain 82%, then 3 weeks after you might remember 62%. While if you didn't have the visual, it declines rapidly. You only remember about 62% to begin with. After 24 hours and 3 weeks later, you remember only 20%. So it's very, very necessary that you have aids. And there we have it on the board, the how you remember. Now, tips for using visual aids, and I'm going to take it off, because I would like you to tell me, what do you think, how do you think visual aids, you said I would help you. What are some of the things we should do when we are preparing to use visual aids in our presentation? What are some of the things that we should do? What are some of the things that we should not do? Have you ever seen people making presentations and doing having some blunders because of visual aids?
Never use yellow fonts on a white screen.
You don't see that, right?
You just don't see it.
You don't see that.
Okay. Presentation from far away.
Okay, so if you want to see your presentation, don't use yellow.
Okay, and the way that you have the point form there, but not everything. I've actually been at presentations where the speaker's entire verbatim words were on the PowerPoint, and they literally read it from the PowerPoint, and it wasn't that.
Right. And if you do a presentation class or a class, and my teacher taught me, PowerPoint is just what it says, PowerPoint. It's the power in the points, right? You put the points up, because if you're going to put it verbatim on the screen, you don't need a presenter, because the presenter is just going through whatever points are there and giving you additional information or information before the points come up, you know. So you are right. So as presenters, when you're making PowerPoints to go with your presentation, you must have more material than what's on the PowerPoint. It is just what it says. It's just points for you to remember what you're going to say about that. If not, they don't need you as the presenter. Okay, so and then when you give your presentation to people after that, your PowerPoint presentation, then there's no need for them to call you to come and be a presenter for them, because somebody else can present it, okay, because you have given them everything. That's just a little tip right there. When you're doing a presentation, your PowerPoint, make them very succinct so that when you hand them out, people will remember what you say about them, but they don't have your presentation. Okay? So what are some of the other things that we should avoid doing when we're using video aids? Yes.
And we Google pictures that are really not completely related to our speech.
Mm-hmm.
And we've had trouble in the mission field with pastors using a number of pictures. For example, they use Catholic pictures on their screen. They didn't know it, but.
Mm-hmm.
But we have to be careful what message we portray. Mm-hmm.
Right. Yes. We're, as leaders, women's ministry leaders especially, we have to be very careful. It is a new world and people want relevant pictures, because some of these pictures are really very old that we use and it doesn't speak to our young people. But at the same time, we must choose them very carefully, just like we choose our clothes. And according to our standards, we might, as a person, believe that there's nothing wrong with jewelry. If we want to wear jewelry, we can, and all of that. But how about making a presentation to 2,000 people who, like, even 50% is from a culture that don't believe in that? You know, I'll tell you a funny story. When I went to the first Ministerial Spouses Association meeting at Oakwood College years and years ago in the 80s, the people from the West Indies that were there were looking at the people from North American Division. And you could almost see the division of the divisions there, because the people from the Inter-American Division, none of them had on a pair of slacks. The people from North American Division, all the spouses had on pantsuits. So the ones over here, then the ones over here, none of them had on a wedding band. But the ones over here in dresses, all of them had on a wedding band. So these people who were with the wedding band from the West Indies, very verbal, they don't keep what they have in their mind. They got up and they asked the question. They're like, why is it that these pastors' wives have on pantsuits when pantsuits are primarily male apparel and the Bible says we're not supposed to do that? And Mrs. Bradford, poor sight, she was trying to be very, you know, and she was like, well, you know, different cultures and different things. And when one lady over here, that is, she jumped up and she said, well, I was wondering, why is it you all have on rings? We're not supposed to be wearing jewelry. And you all have on wedding bands. So then the conversation started and we talked about culture. We talked about the differences in culture. We talked about in the West Indies, primarily they have a lot of marriages that were Yeah, but they had a different name for it. Common law marriages, lots of common law marriages that were very tight. They were a family with children, like 9 children, for like they were living together for 30 years, but they were not married formally because they didn't have the money to have a wedding, they didn't have the money to buy a wedding band, and they believe that you need a ring for marriage. And so you had a lot of common law marriages. And so the ones who got married and were officially married really wore their wedding bands because the guys there look at your fingers to see whether you were married or not. And there is a lot of respect for you when you're pregnant and you have your wedding band on. You know, they treat you much better and all of that. So those ladies were that. And the ones in the pantsuit said, well, if you come up here and live in the wintertime, you will see why we wear the pantsuits, because we got to wear some fleece lining under these things and it gets really very cold. So they worked it out. So that was just a story of different in cultures and stuff like that. Also, going back to auditory and visual and tactile ways of teaching, in genders, men tend to be more auditory. Ladies tend to be more auditory, and men tend to be more visual. Even sexually, you will find that women tend to like what they hear, and men tend to like what they see. So that's a main difference in your presentation, depending on the audience that you have. Okay, so some of the other things we're saying is to avoid using a chalkboard when you're up here, even though chalkboard is a visual thing. Why would we avoid using a chalkboard? Tell me one of the reasons.
You're turning your back to the audience.
It's a bad practice. That's the main reason that we would not do that. We are to prepare our visuals in advance. And why is that? Yeah, so that they're well done. And also so that we are not stealing time from the presentation time to do it. 3, you must make them large enough. Fonts for presentation fonts must be over at least 35. Please note that. I really have a gripe with that. When you go to these presentations and when you look on the board, you see these tiny things and you see so much on the screen and you can't see them. You know, the person up the top is reading them, but you can't see them. They are made for the audience and they should be over 35 font.
And what do you think of cartoons?
Of what?
Cartoons.
Cartoons? Good, great. If they make your point, if they're substantiating your point, make them large enough. Display them where your audience can see. So if you have a whole lot of people in a room, you're not going to put it over here on the ground when half of the audience will not be able to see it, and when you are referring to it, you would put it on the platform where you are to, so that they all can see. And if the room is set up where you could not see it from that direction, it should not be there. You know, everybody should be able to see it. Now, if you're going to pass it around, avoid doing that, because sometimes some people hold on to it, and sometimes some people need to see it longer than others, and it just causes confusion because you want to go to the next point. And you should display it only when you are actually talking about it. So when you have a visual aid, you should still be talking to your audience. You should not be talking to it. You shouldn't be holding it up in front of you and talking to it. You're talking to your audience. And you should also practice using your visual aids before you come in. And you should make sure that they really go with whatever point you're trying to make. Then good visual aids, you can use real objects. Sometimes you don't have to make this. You can use an apple. If you're talking about something, apple is smooth on the outside, it's brightly colored. It speaks to a lot of the senses, the touch, the smell, the taste, you know. And so people can resonate with that because visual aids speak, you should have them speaking to the senses. And then the computer graphics, we talked about that when you're enhancing your presentation with that. What about your handouts? If you notice that sometimes I give you your handouts at the end, and like today I gave you at the beginning. And why would you think that I did that? Why did I give you your handouts today at the beginning versus at the end when I usually give it to you? For you to fill it out, right? For you to fill it out. Because handouts are for different reasons. This lesson today, you need reinforcement in terms of the other two that we did were very historic, you know. So you need reading materials to go back and reinforce your study by reading and filling in gaps that you didn't get in yesterday when I was talking to you. If you took it home and you read it, it reinforces that. Today, we're going to specific points that you need to learn, and so I want to reinforce it while you are here by having you write it. And writing with listening is extra reinforcement. You will remember more of it. Okay, so handouts, you should distribute them mostly after your presentation, unless there is a reason, like today, you have them, and you can, most times, you need to tell your audience that you're going to provide handouts. Why do you think that?
Because they'll leave before you get it.
They would leave, that's one good reason. What's another reason why you should tell people that you're going to give handouts at the end? Very good. They won't be writing copious notes while you're speaking and missing some vital information when you are going to give them the handouts in the hand. And the last thing is make sure you have enough handouts. You should have more than too little because people feel disenfranchised when they leave without getting one of the handouts. Even if they're not going to read it, even if they're going to put it away and never see it again, they feel robbed if they don't get one of the handouts. That's just human nature. No, what about flops? President Reagan was famous for making these. But everybody who is a human being will make this at some time or the other in their presentation. They will mess up. They will say something with their mouth that they did not intend to say, right? And so in order to, what should we do when this happens? Acknowledge it. You can acknowledge it. You can apologize. But the main thing is to keep calm. Simply calm. Acknowledge it. Or just, I would say, do not apologize over and over and over again. Say something like, let me try that once again. Or, let me correct what I just said. Or, this is what I really meant to say. Laugh and just correct it. People know that this happens, and sometimes if you're really very good, like my husband, you will use humor at that point. You will say something really very funny and you will all laugh, and then you'll forget that he made that mistake, you know. So use any one of those if that happens to you. Now let's talk about we have talked about contents. Now we're going to talk about our actual body language because, you know, we speak in different ways. We speak in different ways. Okay, so body language. People remember our language or communication. 7% is verbal. So of what I'm telling you, even though I'm talking so much, you're going to remember 7%. 38% is from the tone of my voice. And 55% is what I'm doing while I'm talking to you. My facial expression, my eye contact, my hands out there moving, you know, the enthusiasm in which I speak, you know, all of that is going to. So what you're saying, you have already prepared, but it's 7% of the actual presentation that people will remember. Your body posture. You are to stand straight, usually. Maybe at times I'm slightly angled to your audience, like this is this way. You could turn slightly this way because you're going to point to the presentation. But if you're going to say something that you really want people to believe and to emphasize it, you need to keep your shoulders square, keep your back straight, your posture straight, meaning that the backside here of your shoulders, you have to raise them up and pull them back. Let me see you all do that. Sit up straight, you know. Shoulders up, pull it back. Squeeze at the back there. Your trainers in your gym would tell you, squeeze right to the back. That's how you know that you are straight and your posture is straight. Okay? So that's how you should be. And when you want to make a point, make sure that you're standing straight. People tend not to believe people who slouch. They feel that they don't have much self-confidence. They don't really believe in themselves. Why should I believe them? So if you're not holding yourself upright and nicely when you're sitting or when you're standing, you need to start doing that. And all of us are guilty of that. Now, if you want to say something dramatic or if it's the kind of presentation that you want to get the emotions going and riled up, like if you're talking about abuse, you're talking to your church about woman abuse and you really want to talk about the impact that woman abuse, the impact that abuse have on women and how many women have been affected over the years from this awful thing, abuse, and how we need to stop that by ending it now and being involved in that campaign, because we really need our ladies to get a hold of themselves and become whole once again. What you do is what I just did. You move from behind the podium and you move forward and you do it with emphasis and you do it with conviction and your facial expressions will show some of the pain, some of the concerns, some of the things that would go along with that kind of topic. So that's how you put drama and emphasis in some of the things that you need to do. And it doesn't mean that you have to change your personality, because some of us are very calm people. But some of these methods that you use will help the audience to become more aligned with what you're saying, and you will become more credible in your discourses. Okay? Now, about the hands. Hands are very important, you know. You've probably seen some speakers doing this. Have you ever seen some speakers while they're speaking, they're cracking their knuckles? You have seen some speakers put their hands in their pockets and they're jingling their pockets. Or they're fidgeting with the cord of the mic, or they're constantly brushing their hair or dusting or something. Very nervous and doing gestures that are sort of inappropriate and is pulling away from the actual presentation that they have. You should try to keep your hands, your hands belong to the side most times. Most times when you're presenting, your hands should be at the side. You should not be holding on to the podium, because it seems like you're holding on to it for strength from falling or something like that. But you can bring up your hands. Usually your hands should not be below your waist, because it pulls attention away from your face and from what you're saying, and it pulls attention to an area that you really don't want attention to be. So you're not going to put your hands down here, because you don't want people to be focusing on down here. You prefer them to be focusing on the face and up here, okay? Just some little tips. And the hand movements should be of such that it doesn't get distracting. Rather, you know, you have some people that use their hands so much that it becomes distracting. You know, you should use it to help you with emphasis, to help you with the thought and the process. And opening your hands says a lot when you're speaking. I did this even before I knew about this, that I open my hands and I speak like this all the time. And then my teacher was saying to me once, she said, oh, well, when she was demonstrating, she said, well, Joan, you come and speak. And I did it. And then she said, well, this is what I was trying to tell you next, that opening your hands say that you're very open, trustworthy. People tend to find you credible, and I don't know why, but this is how I do it, and this is what is said to do. So try to have open hands so that you can engage people, and it can engender trust and openness to what you're trying to say. Okay, eye contact. Anybody knows anything about eye contact?
You put a point across that you make sure that they realize, you know, that they're directing the information. You might not have to look at them exactly, but if they feel that you are, it's like, because like that information is for you. I'm putting across that information for you. Mm-hmm.
Would you come up here for a minute? Yes. What's your name?
Irene.
Irene. Okay. Now, Irene, I'm going to tell you something, and I want you to tell me whether you believe me or not. Mm-hmm. You're such a pretty lady. I really think you are very, very beautiful. You know, your hair looks so nice, and I would really like you to do my hair like you did yours. Do you believe me?
No, I don't.
No, why?
First of all, you are not looking at me. It's like you are avoiding eye contact, and that makes it not believable.
Not believable. Okay. Thank you so very much. So the importance of eye contact, it makes it believable. When you're talking to people and you actually look into their eyes, they can tell. Can't you tell when your child is lying? Can you tell when your child is lying? Can you tell when somebody says that they're really enjoying something and they're really bored? Mm-hmm. Yes, yes, yes. So eye contact is necessary. Now, these are setups that you might have depending on the size of the room. So the first setup, where you have the three sections there, it might be about 30 people that you have into the room. But when you move to about 50 people in the audience, you might have to have people at more angles. So then your eye contact is not only in three sections now, but it's divided into five sections. So instead of looking 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, you're looking at 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, because the room is more spread out, the room is bigger, and you must make eye contact with the people that you are you're speaking to. Any questions on that? You understand that fully, right? Now, what about facial expression? Okay. If I say, I really enjoyed that meal, would you believe me?
No.
No? If I said, that meal was really very good, you should go and have some, would you believe me? You'd have some. Okay. So then our facial expression tells a lot about the story that we're trying to say, and whether it's credible or whether it is believable or whether we will persuade others with it. Okay? So, and the easiest thing for us to do is smile. And when you're up here and there's nothing more, when you figure that you're not reaching anybody or you don't know what expression to have, the smile is always the best. People tend to warm towards smiles, you know. Now, what can somebody do if you're smiling with them, you know? A good smile is really good for your listeners, okay? Now, about your voice, the tone of your voice can either draw people to you or push people away. Some of us, you know, my voice is very low in comparison to a lot of...
Put them to sleep.
My voice?
No.
Oh, no. Yes, you have different pitch to your voice, you know. Have you ever heard someone that's an adult and when you hear them talk, you thought it was a child that was speaking? They have a very, their voice is high-pitched. And then you could have someone who looks really very young and stuff, when they open their mouth, their voice is so low, you know, you're really surprised. And some voices are very loud, some voices are very quiet. So know your voice and then adjust your tone according to your voice, okay? And tone is really the sweetness to your voice, you know? You can say things that are very hard, but if your tone is really very sweet, then people will say, okay, the message was very hard, but the way she delivered it, you could tell that she didn't mean us any harm, you know? Because you have some very serious messages to deliver as women ministries leaders. And you're going to have to deliver them to your pastors and to the men in your congregation and to the ladies. And they're very hard messages, but your tone can help you. And the smile that you have can help you. Sometimes we feel that, okay, because the message is so hard, then we need to have a face that goes along with the message. Not necessarily. And, you know, some people say that if you don't have the face that goes with it, then they're going to take it lightly. But I had a teacher that every time she was going to do something hard, she would smile. But we knew that what was coming was going to be hard anyway. You know, but, you know, the tone and the way you look and all of that is very important. The voice have been called the melody of the conversation. The voice is the melody of the conversation. It can be loud, it can be soft, it can be harsh, it can be angry, it can be mellow, and it can be smoothing. The tone of the voice, it represents 38% of the message that is delivered. So 38% is in your tone. The voice pitch, the volume, the tone, the speed, the number and length of your pauses, whether you stammer, the intensity of your voice, the emotion that comes along with your voice, all of that go into when you're presenting, okay? And you must be very careful. Now, the rate at which you speak is really very important because some people slow down when they come up here to present and some people speed up. Now, if you speed up, sometimes it becomes more charismatic and it flows better and all of that. But if it is so fast that people cannot understand, then it doesn't make sense. And if it is so slow that people become bored and there is not much expression and it is not very persuasive, then people become bored. So be careful with that. How the word is said. Now, you might mean something, you know, be careful of the words that you use, because the meaning might mean one thing to you, and the culture of the people that you're speaking to, the old, that word might mean something else in that culture. So be very careful of your audience, who you're going to speak to, and the words that you choose to use. The average speaker would speak 100 to 150 words per minute. If you're speaking slowly, if you're speaking too slow, you'd be speaking anywhere from 80 to 90. And if you're speaking fast, 170 upwards. Okay? Would you read that for me, please? Could you read that? Those who talk. Okay, so be careful, be careful. Make sure not too slow, not too fast, and that you have practice. Practice, practice, practice. Use your outline and practice. Practice aloud. Practice in front of the mirror. Practice in front of your family. Practice in a place like where you're going to speak, like if it's in a church and you're going to preach or something like that. You want to go there when nobody is there, when you want to get used to that environment. You can go there maybe on a day that nobody else is there and you can practice. Then you have to refine, become polished with your tone and with your gestures and how you say the words, you know. Use similar circumstances or similar situations where you're going to speak. Now, if you're going to be asked to introduce someone, and this is what we're mostly asked to do, and I wanted to do some practice sessions with that, but we have no time left? We have no time left. Okay. So what I would like you to do is to learn how to do an introduction. When you do an introduction, okay, it's very much like how we talked about practicing. You write what you're going to say. You make sure that the facts that you're going to say about the speaker is accurate. And you're going to adapt your remarks to the occasion that you're doing. So if it is worship service, then you talk in light of that. It needs to be formal, a more formal introduction. If it is at a woman's sports day, then the introduction is going to be a little bit different. It's more informal and stuff. Third, adapt your remarks to the audience. So first, you make sure you have the facts about the speaker. You make sure you check out that ahead that they are accurate. Then secondly, you're going to adapt to the occasion, and then you're going to adapt to the audience that you have. Okay? And that's mostly what it should not be longer than 1.5 to 2 minutes maximum for an introduction. Sometimes we have these long introductions. And when you're finished, you should say something like, join me in giving a warm welcome to so-and-so, to Sally. And then you start the applause, if that's necessary. And when the speaker comes to the podium, you shake the person's hand. And you don't leave the podium until that speaker comes. Then you shake their hand and you go to your seat and sit down. We were wanting to practice that, but we won't today. Also with announcements. If you have announcement to do, you make sure it is a creative way that you're going to do it in. Make sure you have the facts, the place, the time, if there's a cost, you know, who should be there. Make sure you have all the important things that you need, and make sure you do it in a way that will create some enthusiasm for, because you have to announce your women's ministries, retreats and occasions and events. Make sure you're properly prepared to do these. And if you have to present an award, which are, these are three of the things that we mostly do as women's ministries leader. If you have to prepare for an award, make sure what you say is very credible, very positive, very accurate. And then you invite the audience to applause also. When the person comes up, then you present and then you go back to your seat. Now, those are some of the things. The other things that you need to look about is the room setting. Make sure you come and look at it if you have a chance to come the day before to make sure you understand what the seating is like. They have different kinds of seating. You have round table, you have table setting, you have conference style, you have circular style, classroom style, you have personal space style, you have the pod style, you have all different styles of setting up. Make sure you understand what it's going to be for you. Also, with using platforms, it is necessary if you have over 100 people, you need to be on a platform so that they can see you. If it is less, then if it's a women's ministry event, you want to have some sort of camaraderie with the ladies that you have. You want to build rapport, you stay here where I am so that you can learn the terrain, learn the people, and it would be good. If you have a hostess at the front door to welcome the persons in and to give them information, that would be very nice. They should be somebody who smiles well and who is very courteous to others. We would prefer the entrance to be to the back, because side entrances tend to be very disruptive. Arrive early, have some music on if you are able to do so. And the last thing is your personal appearance. If you are going to give a presentation to a group and it is an informal setting at a sports thing, make sure you are appropriately dressed. It seems that people tend to like to be more conservatively dressed speaker. The higher the neckline, the more credibility sometimes they feel. Make sure that things are not hanging out. You know, if you're going to give a presentation, usually something with a little sleeve is good, because you feel more confident. If you're not wondering whether people are looking down your neckline, you have everything covered and all of that. Your skirt is long enough, the length of your skirt. You know, it's really very, very necessary to make sure that you cover these bases, because it doesn't matter what personality you are, you have people of many different personality styles in your audience, okay? So fabrics that you should choose when you have to travel to be speakers. You don't want something that is going to crush. I love these kind of clothes that you don't have to iron, because you come here and you hang them up and they're fine. You just put them on. I know a lot of young people love cotton and stuff. I love cotton too, but when I'm home, you know, but make sure you have something that is not all crushy and stuff. Make sure no jewelry that is really distracting or sparkles, that if light is on you, it you know, it sends some sparks into some people's eyes. Have you ever seen that? Where the light is shining on the speaker and, you know, the jewelry is causing that. Blues tend to be very good. Dark blues are really good for credibility and strength. Light blues are calming and like that. Yellows tend to be cheerful, but it causes a little bit of anxiety. Red is very energetic and dynamic, but it depends on the kind of presentations that you're going to be given. And brown is common, but it tends to be boring, you know. So make sure you choose your colors, your necklines are good, you have a tailored look, and you are well prepared, and your shoes are comfortable. It's nothing worse than being up here, having a pair of high shoes on, and you are so uncomfortable. So these are the guidelines that we have. Dressing appropriately for a presentation cannot be stressed enough. When you know you are properly dressed, you can forget your appearance and invest yourself in giving the best of what you have to give to your audience. And this is what Sister White says about platform decorum. The outside appearance is frequently an index to the mind, and we should be careful what signs we hang out for the world to judge of our faith. God bless you as you practice what you have learned today.
Can you put back the slides, please? Just to
okay.
The list, because there it is.
Good. Okay. Okay. God bless you. I think our next speaker is here.
Philistines are upon us. They're at
okay. Okay. Come on up. Here we go.
No, thank you.
Thank you all for coming. I am hoping that I will get to meet you guys on a personal level. Maybe tomorrow or so. I don't know where you are. But if you have any questions, anything that you would like to ask me, anything that I could help you with, at, you know, for your home church, I'll be more than happy to help you. God bless you.
Take some.
Yes.
1, 2, 3, 4.